Hey superstars, welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today I am joined by me. Yes, I'm solo podcasting. The meat of our matter will ultimately take us into polarity constructs, how they're operating in terms of propping up hierarchy, disempowering you and me and all of us, and we're going to take a meandering route there because I have some other things to discuss with us. I've also decided that continuing to weigh in on the weaponization of customer service, on how the social engineers are attempting to enslave us through all the digital platforms, automated this, that, the user agreements, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm gonna continue to share my observations on this. And I look forward to other people doing the same because I'm so clear that this is the issue that can absolutely unify us. It's not a partisan issue. We're all equally screwed over. And I feel like some simple boycotts of taking our business and our money away from the platforms and corporations that don't offer phone service could go a long way in staving off what they are attempting. And when I say they, again, the social engineers are attempting to frame as an inevitable, which is so annoying because it's just, they're just using language to try to mind control us into buying into it. And then it's extra frustrating when I see people like you and me and all of us who are having these conversations, who are hip to it, talking about these things with that ridiculous, inevitable languaging. Anyway, so I'm recording this on Zoom because Zoom gives me the cool background, and there are other pluses to the platform. I've had my issues with Zoom recently because they did take away phone support from people who are paying for their service, and I continue to use their service. So that's on me. And they just did an update, didn't ask my permission, just some automatic update, and it changed the whole interface, right? So it just adds this extra layer of clunkiness, right? It's one of those, you know, it's like the record skipping when they're just anything to kind of perv the momentum or the flow or the ease. Like, it's such great louche collection if we're going into the narrative of like, what, extra dimensional lizard parasites behind the 3D apocalyptic iteration, feeding off of our louche. It's such a great louche collection strategy, at least for the lizards assigned to me and my realm, because historically, those types of computer kerfuffles have in the past inspired some big negative emotionalings from my realm. And at the same time, like going into the, you know, the narrative where like everything is here to serve our awakening, it's all baked in, it's all perfect. Like, it definitely has accelerated some emotional intelligencing mastery in terms of learning to maintain my center and kindness and compassion when dealing with, I mean, I was gonna say the humans who are the interfaces, but I don't even know if they are. It's all so confusing. But anyway, so it's just this added layer of frustration in terms of, like, I was trying to get on a meeting the other day and I couldn't find my personal meeting ID because they don't make it easy. Now I have to like press an arrow to find it. Like, thank you for making it more opaque, less user-friendly, like every freaking iPhone they put out that just gets bigger and clunkier, or the laptops where they take away more ports. Anyway, but I have good news, and I have good news. So there was this thing circulating that Facebook, Meta, Instagram, that whole, you know, octopus of grossness was giving us until June 26 to opt out of them using our posts, photographs, personal information to train their AI. And it was very hard to find where to do that. I saw multiple videos on Instagram and still had to like take a few leaps. And then I was posting about it on Facebook and a bunch of people were like, how did you do it? Where are you finding it? Anyway, so they approved it. And they denied me two other times before they approved it. So I want to share because I'm encouraging tenacity for anyone who's been in this conversation with Meta. Okay, so here I'm sharing screen and I've got a whole new. I'm just gonna guess that this works. I'm hoping that this is working. Okay, so this was my triumph that I'm super excited to share. So I came back from 2 weeks on the road, 10 days on the road, and I could not believe good news from Facebook. The subject says, for those listening with our ears, or if you just prefer me to read to you, object to your information being used for AI at Meta with my case number. Hi, Danny, we've reviewed your request and will honor your objection. This means your request will be applied going forward. So I don't really like that part that they're giving themselves this pass on using the stuff that came before. I mean, there's an aspect of me that's like, who are we kidding? They already have everything anyway. But the principle of it, at the very least. But I want to share the initial objections just to help inspire you guys to like, do not take no for an answer from these psychopaths. Okay, so this was after I first found the form to fill out online, and you're supposed to like basically give them an essay as to why you deserve for them to grant you your opt-out, which is ridiculous. It's like, I don't need to explain myself. It's a no. So I filled out the form and then I get this. Hi, Danny, thank you for contacting us. We don't automatically fulfill requests and we review them consistent with your local laws. If you want to learn more about generative AI, no, I really don't, blah, 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 blah. So they sent me that. We don't automatically fulfill requests. Like, no, you do actually, because the instructions in that form that I filled out was to opt out, do this. It's not a negotiation. Like, I don't need to convince you. You don't have my consent. It's so clear. So I sent them another, I replied, I did. I don't remember what their thing was. We don't automatically review them consistent. If you want to learn more, please review the information. So my response was, I did. It is not up to you to judge my opt-out request. It is your job to fulfill it. This is not up for negotiation. I am opting out. These are my rights. Thank you for honoring them. So then they send me, and this one took more time. Like the first one came back the same day. This one was like a few days. I think. I mean, you guys can see the dates. Never trust me with numbers or dates, but this is how it is in my memory. Hi, thank you for contacting us. Based on the information that you have provided to us, we are unable to identify any examples of your personal information in a response from one of Meta's generative AI models. Let's just pause, because I'm pretty smart cookie, especially when it comes to words, and I have no idea what that sentence is attempting to convey. Based on the information that you have provided to us, we are unable to identify any examples of your personal information in a response. What does that mean? I am welcoming if anyone listening to this knows what that means and can walk me through it, please let me know. That's a lot of gobbledygook. And then, but then the topper is, as a result, we cannot take further action on your request. This is so one of my pet peeves. We can't do it. It's not up to us. We don't have any authority here, but some external boogeyman that has some sort of authority over responses from Meta's generative AI models is saying that we cannot. Like, it's such a wishy-washy, weaselly. I hate it when these gatekeepers, who absolutely are acting in positions of false authority by rejecting requests, not honoring our requests, claim that they don't have any authority, that it's not up to them to tell us that they're going to dishonor our privacy requests. It's out of their hands. There's some mystical, magical demon in the sky who's telling this AI bot that it can't do it. So obviously that didn't work for me. And I sent another one. Again, I might be getting the dates confused. I think I did get the dates confused. Oh no, wait. It is not up to you to decide whether to honor my opt-out request. That is a violation of my privacy rights. You clearly state in your user agreement that I, the user, can opt out of you using my personal posts and information to train your AI. I am requesting said opt-out. If you decline my request, then you are in violation of my constitutional rights, and I will have my lawyer prosecute you to the full extent of the law. This is not up for negotiation. I do not consent. Opt me out. So again, like I said, these might not be in the exact right order, but you're getting the gist of what I gave them to finally get that we reviewed your request and will honor your objection. It's crazy how, stop the screen share. Like, it warmed my heart. The psycho AI enslavement mechanism warmed my heart by sending me a vaguely human, we will honor your opt-out request. The caveat is the caveat. But then it just, I stepped outside myself and it's like, how bad has it gotten? Right? How much of this have I normalized and internalized that I'm like, oh, thank you, AI enslavement mechanism, for honoring my request. Anyway, I trust that you guys are opting out as well and are having a fine, easy time of it. This is the vision I'm holding for all of us to continue to push back. Even if it's for optics, it's important that, you know, they're flooded with people saying, no, this isn't okay. And then, you know, please continue tenaciously to bug them to approve it until you get the same message that I got from my new AI enslavement crush. Just kidding. So it's gay month, and my social media feed today, I haven't really been on it much, but it's showing me images from Pride celebrations. And the ones that I saw today, there was a guy on stage who was wearing like leather straps, like a leather jock strap. Like Doc Martin type boots. And I think he might've had some sort of like leather harness, and he was on stage rapping. I couldn't hear the lyrics, and like twerking his, oh, and he was like 200 plus pounds. Like I'd put him in the 200 to 300 pound range. So he was like twerking. There was a lot of movement going on. Excuse me. I would share clips, but I'm sure you guys are seeing this. This is going to come out. It might not be gay month anymore, but I think we all know what I'm talking about. And I'm on the fence about calling it Pride Month as well, because it's like, it's the weaponization of that word pride. But I also notice in saying gay month, like it, I don't mean disrespect to gay people, because I know it's not gay people, it's the op, and the op mind controlling otherwise confused people who are behaving however they're behaving. But I also don't want to like ratify the stealing of pride in the same way the rainbow was stolen. And let's be clear, it was stolen. And again, not by gay people, but by the Tavistock lizard psychopaths who are engineering this divide and conquer, divide and rule situation by way of the alphabet community and a lot of the ops running through them. So in the same way that they stole the rainbow, which used to be universal and for everyone, and now you wear the rainbow and all of a sudden you're like gay or a gay ally, or that's what you're, the message being telegraphed through the weaponization of a meteorological event slash symbol. Same thing with pride. So I don't feel comfortable saying it. And also pride, like, isn't pride a sin in that paradigm? Like, is pride something we really want to be cultivating? So anyways, the other video that I saw today was a woman, but she was wearing basically the same outfit, like some assless leather panty thing. She might have had fishnets, and she was like humping a car, maybe like a cop car at a parade. And I'm like, I don't understand the optics of like gay pride, because it makes it seem like all gay people are like deranged, exhibitionists, like with these like BDSM fetishes. Like, I find it odd, the optics of pride in general, because it's all this. And I don't say deviant behavior in a judgmental way, like, please, I'm an Aquarius, I'm all for deviant behavior, but it's like the way that it's being normalized in the mainstream. I mean, you guys totally know what I'm talking about, but I really don't like that it's being conflated with gay. And I also saw some, oh my God, this was ridiculous. Well, I heard it on No Agenda, and it was, like, it wasn't a psychologist, or it was like a psychologist who was preaching to doctors about how to be more inclusive to gay people on their medical intakes. I think that's what it was. So that gay people don't feel threatened by like a generic medical intake form, but needing it to be more massaged towards gay, which again, I don't think means what we used to think it means. Anyway, so she was explaining in this news segment, which was on some sort of mainstream news show, how like, well, medical practitioners should ask people their pronouns when you know, meeting them for the first time. And I'm like, the fact that this is being conflated with being gay, I feel like is like trying to create the identity that like gay people are stupid, or gay people are retarded, or gay people are like thin-skinned mind control morons. Because I get that there are thin-skinned mind control, we'll call them human beings, who are moroning, right? Who are buying into it and thus acting like fucking idiots. I'm not saying they are idiots. They certainly are acting like idiots. And then conflating that with people who are just like sexually and romantically attracted to people of the same sex, I find it weird that those are being conflated. I am not someone who is attracted to people of the same sex sexually, romantically, but like, I'm offended for gay people and my gay friends because they're smart. They're not like needing a month of being special, or I mean, I think in like current culture, it's kind of a 24/7, 365 days a week of being extra super special and celebrated as extra super special. Like, I don't think that's gay. I think that's like a mental illness. Like, that's like groupthink at its worst. So I'd like to couple those. So I guess maybe it is Pride Month. But again, I don't want to do that to the word pride. It's like alphabet retard month is what I think it is. I'm going to pause for a sip on that. Okay. So now we're going to get to the meat of the matter. We've had our warm up. And what brought me into today's topic is these bangs on my head. So my girlfriend, Luna Lisa, who cuts my hair, has been pitching me on French girl bangs for a couple months. So I finally surrendered. I'm like, great, let's do it. And I move on with my life. And because I make videos and live in community where people know me and see me, like, I get feedback on the new hairdo. And the consistent feedback that I'm getting is, you look so much younger. It makes you look so much younger. So-and-so couldn't believe it was you. He said, you look so much younger. I never take that as a compliment. That's not anything that I personally ever enjoy hearing. And I'm going to break it down for you in terms of the language coding, and then we're going to touch in on the language of eternity. But let's just start with younger. So younger is part of a polarity construct. What is a polarity construct? Polarity constructs, which I write about in the language of betterarchy, and which I'll be reading. Well, you know what? Let's read about polarities. Instead of me trying to wing it, instead of winging it, like I crafted it. I put so much effort into, you know, the just right words in the just right places with the just right punctuation. I'm just going to read you from the book. So polarities are in the separation chapter of the language of betterarchy. There are 10 chapters in the hierarchical languaging part of the book. And polarities come under separation, but I say this in the book, a lot of these words will exist in multiple categories. So in addition to being a representation of separation speak, polarities also move us into wrong use of will by way of judgment. But we're gonna get there. Just safeporting you, as they say in the orgasmic meditation cult, letting you know where we're going. All right. Polarities. Hierarchy is a very black, white, good, bad, left, right, us, them sort of system. Hierarchy relies upon reductive polarities to divide and control the populace because hierarchy needs us to be at perpetual odds with one another to function. This endless pitting keeps us in a near constant state of fight or flight, wherein cortisol and other lizard brain hormones flood the bloodstream, freak out the nervous system, shroud our perceptions, and put us on the defensive. In attempting to whittle an omniscopic world of every which way possibility and expression into reductive binaries, we shape a reality forged of dualistic division. Implications abound. If you're not right, you must be left. She's better, therefore he's worse. We're good, so they're bad. Polarities are encoded with their opposites, verily forcing those communicating within the confines of the construct to choose a side. It is a subtle, though powerful form of neurolinguistic bullying that lends itself to various psychological manipulations, including the infamous false dichotomy, a kind of reductive oversimplification in which two diametrically opposed points of view are presented as the only options, thus attempting to fragment the world into antithetical categories. But polarities are divisive in and of themselves without needing to leap into established propaganda tactics to fragment the people. Take the seemingly innocuous example of better worse as follows. All right, we're not going to get into better worse, but if I say something is better, if I'm saying, which tincture do you prefer? If you say this one's better, then I know by inference, by way of this being a polarity construct, that this one is worse. You didn't say this one is worse. But by saying this one is better, you are automatically communicating that this one is worse. So, what is communicated when someone tells me that my bangs make me look younger? Oh, so I looked old? So you thought I looked old, right? That's the instant, that's just how the brain works with polarity because they're inextricably bound to one another. It's why it's so damaging when we watch these, you know, like fake journalists. You know, these spokesholes on television shows or internet shows that are billed as news or journalism, and they'll throw something out and then they'll say, you know, but the left or, you know, but the right, right? And as soon as you say that, it's like you're automatically activating that us, them, good, bad, right, wrong polarity. You know, just framing that might not have been the best example, but like, it's so damaging. I'm just thinking of how many times I've heard our elected officials say, well, you know, well, hopefully the people on the left will get it right. Or, you know, well, those of us on the left, like, we understand the blah, 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 blah. So they didn't just say that the right doesn't understand the blah, 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 but it was inferred by saying, well, we on the left, you know, and I'm not picking sides. The left and the right both do it just as egregiously. It's just as harmful. I mean, I'm not one for imposing rules on speech or political discourse. And if we could banish the words left, right, liberal, progressive, Democrat, Republican from the entire political discourse, that whole conversation would be so well served. If we could just talk about issues as issues without continually injecting those polarities that function to hijack amygdalas, get us into that us them separation state, it would be the best thing we could do for politics. But going back to the example of my bangs make me look younger, for me, all that was triggered in that was like, oh, these people think I look old. These people thought I looked old. Did I look old? I didn't realize I looked old. And it's not even a construct that I buy into because it's so damaging and fake. And we'll get into that in a second. But polarities in general are ineffective communication strategies because they're inextricably bound to one another. So, better worse example that I wrote about in the book, I'll just give you really briefly, was I was road tripping with a friend. We were listening to a podcast. Jordan Peterson was on the podcast, and he says he was talking about single mothers, and he was saying how dual parent households are better than single parent households. Now, Jordan Peterson has the laziest, most oversimplified, reductive speech patterns of anyone in that IDW space. And there is a lot of it, right? Because we see the wine signs propping up their false intellectual superiority through that very specific strategy, good thinking, better thinking, whatever. But Jordan Peterson, you know, he does that like kind of in the spiral dynamics, like I see him very much as holding the blue, right? Like a very expansive, very awakened blue, but still in that blue realm of consciousness. So black, white, authoritarian, good, bad, right, wrong. So he says dual parent households are better than single parent households. And my girlfriend, who's a single mother, was like, that's some bullshit right there. Who the hell is this guy? And she got all amygdala hijacked. Now, he didn't say single parent households are worse. But it's absolutely implied and inferred when you're saying dual parent households are better, because better and worse, as polarity constructs, are inextricably bound. You can look at them as like two sides of a chopstick, right? They're opposite sides, but it's the same chopstick. It's the same thing, right? So it does apply to all polarity constructs. It's why, like, putting youth on the pedestal of hierarchy is so damaging and stupid. And it's such a program. Like, it's so fake and engineered. It's a story that can so easily be rewritten by just removing our consent from it, right? But we live in this culture that elevates youth as the end all be all and demonizes what? Elderhood, age? It's this hierarchical nonsense, right? Like, it so folds in to my perspective on how damaging and outdated and ridiculously ineffective hierarchy is. And I feel like this is the perfect ex example of how we laud younger as something better, as something superior to time's onward ticking, which granted is an illusion, but it's an illusion that we've bought into so hardcore that our collective agreement that time is linear and finite is the dominant temporal paradigm in this culture. But let's not kid ourselves. It's only the dominant temporal paradigm because we continue to feed it by speaking its language and by living within its completely fictional confines. I'm not under any delusions that, you know, I myself am going to Well, I was gonna say vanquish, but it's like I'm not at odds with it, right? I know that part of my mission here is to help unravel the hidden mortality codes in language and help us realize how, by us speaking the mortality codes, we have created and sustained a temporal reality marked by death and aging and degradation, like specifically linear time chronological degradation. And I know that that's something I'm here to give humanity, right? I'm not like David Wolf that's like, I'm never dying or I'm living to be 280 or whatever it is. My friend Diallo, he has this as well. And I love that. I think it's awesome when people like have that total passion and devotion for longevity. For me, it's more about optimizing. Like, I just want to feel good and be able to do what I want to do while I'm here for the body that I have in this moment, right? And I do put effort in to optimizing my machine because it feels really good. It feels really good to have energy and to be strong and to be flexible and to dance and play and hit the ball hard and in the corner so it's a good crotch shot and I win the match. Like all that is fun. So for me, it's about optimizing. It's not about like anti-aging or defying age or living forever. Like that's just not my trip. That being said, like I'm playing the eternity game, which also helps give me a slightly different perspective. Time's onward ticking. I also feel like those of us who've opted out of the breeding game have like a very privileged, another word that's been so weaponized, right? So I'm like noticing my reticence to use it, but I do see it as a privilege and as a high blessing to be able to engage time the way I get to engage it because I'm not on that. I mean, there's so many time markers, like linear temporal markers when people are raising kids, right? There's the development of the child. It's this week's old. It's 190 weeks old. It's 300,000 weeks old, like whatever it is. Or months old, when parents like really drag that out. Yes, single people make fun of you for that. I'm just being honest. But there's also, like school and first grade, second grade, and bake sales and the spring dance and like they're just so summer camp, right? I completely understand how choosing the path of parenthood is absolutely going to, I don't want to say lock people into linear time, but invite them into a much more like linear temporal structure than those of us who opted out of the breeding game and therefore have much more multidimensional access, in how we choose to set up our lives, right? It's a choice. It's totally a choice at this point, right? Like personally, I believe that multidimensional time is more what is real and what is true. And right now we're being tasked with like unraveling the enslavement construct that has been how time has been presented to us as a culture. And I definitely recommend checking out any and every conversation I've had with Michael Wan on this podcast. Because I think he's doing like he has such an interesting take on time and he's the go-to guy for transforming that meta construct called time. I'm gonna pause and collect my thoughts because I have a lot of thoughts on time. What I was saying was, I mean, obviously there's no wrong way to do time and as I've spoken about, as I've written about, as I wrote about in Durek's book, because and I don't have an NDA, so like this is all fair game. But when I was writing Durek's book for him, for those who don't know, Durek Verrett, he has a book out called, what the hell is it called? I should know. I named it Spirit Hacking. I'm the one who titled it. I'm the one who wrote it. And thank God I had it on top of my fridge to remind me what it was called. So when I got when I got the gig to write it for him, they already had an outline created with the publisher that they had approved. And so there was this whole time chapter, and in like, the hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of interviews that I did with Dirk to fill things in, that chapter was still pretty light. So I gifted it my perspectives on the jankiness of our calendrical system, which I've written about in my books subsequently, but how it's super janky. Like, September is not the 7th month, October is not the 8th month. You have 30 days some months, 31 days some other ones, 28 days except for every 4 years. Like, it's so janky and inchoate and makes no sense. It has nothing to do with organic time, the moon. And whether the moon is organic or not, the lore around it has created enough of a structure in this realm that it would be infinitely more organic for us to sync up with every other being in nature and get back on that 13 moon calendar. But anyway, so the distortion, as I see it, is this fictitious linear time construct that we've like been shoved into. And think of, like, I've spoken about it before as like shoving an octopus into a human cardigan. And it's like, okay, it could fit like two of its arms, kind of, a little bit, but it can't extend to its full capacity, and all its other arms are like janky. So it's very limited in this very limiting, reductive construct. But were we to take the cardigan off, the cardigan being this illusion of linear time and our janky ass 12-month calendrical system, then we would avail ourselves to the truth of multidimensional time, right? And be able to flow in the eternal now in a more organic, coherent, harmonious way. I'm gonna pause. I'm really a fan of the pause, and I will say Richard Rudd's Art of Contemplation is a phenomenal unpacking of the beauty of the pause. I got a lot from that book. I do recommend it highly. I think I'm an affiliate, but I don't even know where those links are, and I don't think it matters. I'd really rather you just get the book and read it because it's a good book and it'll enrich you in a good way. Anyway, it's also a way, I'm just gonna keep going on this aside because Aquarius Girls podcast this way. Because I'm still in the process of moving through the outdated resistance that has come up in the past around solo podcasting. And so the days that I'm doing it, there's a lot of me talking myself into it. Right? And what I'm doing is I'm programming myself for it to be fun and easy, right? So I'm declaring the ways that it's going to be fun and easy, and taking pauses is one of the joys, right? Because when I'm riffing with a podcast guest, like, once we're recording, the conversation is going. We're not stopping, we're not editing. It's the luxury of doing the solo podcast is, I can take my time, I can meander around, I can sip yummy beverages, I can press pause at any moment, take a couple deep breaths, clear my head, shake the body, and come on back. So I'm liking the solo podcasts. They're more feminine and gentle and fluid, and I'm into it. Okay. So here's the thing with younger, older as polarity constructs, and this is the entirety of how we speak about time. I'm going to call it temporal languaging. It's always a comparison. Younger, older, you look so much younger. So in that, the way that that is languaged in the grammar, in the syntax, it's younger than what? There's a comparison to another iteration of me, an iteration that didn't have bangs, that clearly, by the law of polarity, looked older, right? Now, that would be fine and dandy, Truly, maybe. No, it wouldn't, because the mortality codes are still embedded. But I'm going to come to them back to the mortality codes in a moment. The implied judgment that younger is better through however many decades, centuries of cultural indoctrination here in the West, right? It's certainly not like that in other parts of the world that appropriately revere their elders and the wisdom and life experience that they carry. And the expression of that, right? In other cultures, that is revered as beautiful. In this culture, it's not revered as beautiful, not because it's not beautiful, but because we live in a fucked up, age-phobic, death-phobic culture that profits off of propping up youth, right? It's such a great marketing ploy because it's impossible to attain. But there's always a new thing, a new product, a new procedure, a new hack, a new supplement, a new program, like a new whatever that's going to make you look younger. And in this culture, looking younger is the holy freaking grail. It doesn't matter that it's totally fake. It doesn't matter that people are shortening their lifespan by taking interventions that aren't actually healthy for the whole system, cutting themselves, are going under general anesthetic. I mean, isn't that how Joan Rivers died? There is the narrative that she was taken out for exposing Michelle Obama as a tranny. Allegedly, this is just what Joan Rivers said. But regardless, like going under the knife is a risk. Going under the knife is a ridiculous indulgence that I find hilarious when it's like people who are the ones who are whining about like how terrible the United States is, and who are like being mind controlled into that like woke commie whatnot, but then they're like getting IVF and having voluntary plastic surgery. Like, we have such a crazy culture. So, because of that polarity, right, because of that inextricable quantum entanglement between younger and older, at least for me, and based on my values and priorities, I'm never trying to look younger. Like, that's not ever happening. There are times where I'm wanting to look the best that I can look for who I am now, but that's never a goal. That's not my paradigm, right? I'm not thinking or perceiving the world through that lens because I know how damaging that lens is. So maybe for other people that's a compliment. For me, I don't take that as a compliment. And I don't like the idea of people, and I get it, people judge. I'm not a fan of it. But just knowing that people are like judging, like how my sunspin expression is going, like according to their indoctrination or their projections or their preferences. Like, I'm not into it. I'm not interested. If people want to judge, that's fine. Keep it to yourself. I don't want to know. So it's this like, hierarchy, a go-go psyop that a lot of people here have bought into, that younger is better. Right. So I'll also hear a lot of the times people say, and like, I don't like to talk about my age, not because I have hangups about my age, but it's twofold. One, it's because through my languaging work, I've tapped into the mortality codes and I know what activates the mortality codes. And speaking any sort of temporal comparison, which I know I mentioned and I will come back to, activates the mortality codes, right? So when we're sitting here framing, like, how old is this person? Am I younger than she is? Am I older than she is? Like, even just entertaining that thought process is activating the mortality codes that have this like linear progression that is a way that reality can configure, but it doesn't have to be. It really doesn't have to be. But the other reason is Christiane Northrup wrote the foreword to, it's another book. It's another book in the shelf. Maybe it's The Body Code. I might not be remembering that correctly, but it struck me that she said, you know, she's often asked what's the single most important thing you could do for your health and well-being, and she said that it's stop identifying with your age and stop telling anyone your age. And she stopped, like she said that she, you know, did this from her experience, and this is, you know, in her own personal lived experience, in addition to her patients as a doctor, that it's a single healthiest thing we can do for ourselves. Why? Because just like pathologies and diagnoses, numbers have been coded and weaponized with stories and afflictions and aesthetic expressions, right? That by association are going to be projected when we speak those numbers, right? So let's say, you know, you and I run into one another at a park. It doesn't even matter. So let's just say that you ask me how old I am, and I tell you I'm 25. Okay. Your mind is automatically going to, like, well, 25 looks like this. This is how I have been programmed to associate 25. This is also my experience of 25. And this person looks like this. So I'm going to determine that she, what? Looks terrible for her age, is lying. Like, there's some sort of, you're measuring up. Like, you're just wanting to, and again, this is happening in the unconscious. When we ask people their age, basically, we're wondering, are they older than us? Are we younger than us? How can I expect to look at that age? Is this person age appropriate for my daughter, for my sister? There's some sort of like comparison temporal measuring that's happening. Oh, this person is 97. How does that line up with what I think 97 is supposed to look like based on my programming, my lived experience, propaganda, etc., right? There's always a comparing that's happening. And in that comparing, we're using linear time as our baseline. And when we do that, we're activating the mortality codes. I picture linear time as like a rope strung between two posts, low posts. And anytime we speak linear time, anytime we activate those mortality codes, we're putting a stake in that rope. What are we doing when we put a stake? We're disrupting the flow. We're creating blockages, right? So when we're speaking linear time, I'm older, I'm younger, I'm this age. You look amazing for your age. I don't feel this age. I'm ancient. You know, like whatever it is. Every time we speak those, we're just adding another stake to that rope and fixing it to the ground, right? Thus disrupting any flowing motion between the two points, which are themselves a lie, right? Propping up linear time. But it's a progression, right? We have what? I mean, I don't know what the time period is in terms of how many generations of indoctrination into the linear time narrative. So who knows, like, how many sun spins or you know, dimensional leaps it's going to take for us to unravel those and avail ourselves to the truth of multidimensional time. I don't know about that. It's been about, I'd say, again, like I'm using linear time. It's such a process, the process of extricating ourselves from linear time. And this is why I don't share my age, is because, or I haven't been in the practice of sharing my age, because it's just a projection minefield. And because I am in the process of continuing to unidentify with age and with a lot of things, right? Because for me, unidentifying and unprogramming is a fun game that I like to play in this incarnation. And so I have given up identifying with age because it's just programming, right? It's just like, oh, here's the 30 program, right? You're supposed to be afraid of it. I remember the art God of Small Things, such a beautiful book by Arundhati Roy, and in that book, the main character turns 31, and throughout the book, she re refers to it as 31, a viable, dieable age, because it's the age at which she's facing her own mortality, right? Like, these can be inserted into every age. I remember my friend Jane having a birthday party. She was prone to having big parties, And she gave a thank you speech, and she said, "I can't believe that I'm turning this ungodly age." And at the time, I had fewer sun spins than Jane. Jane was turning 42. And I remember her saying that and watching the program come in, "Oh, 42 is an ungodly age. That's the age where I should start hating myself for being old because Jane just announced it," right? It's and granted, like none of this is happening on the conscious level, but this is how we're programmed, right? Whatever was going on with our parents, in our families, like, and we might have really healthy, families that have really healthy ideas on aging, we're still part of this culture. We're still part of this culture. Remember age-defying beauty, one of those Revlons or whatnot? Like, why do I have to defy age? Like, why is it a problem? Why is it this thing that we're supposed to be in conflict with? Only because that's what all the advertising agencies have told us so that we will buy all their creams and serums and this's and that's. That is such a distraction. Like, do we not have anything better to do with our time here, with whatever, however many breaths we have here, than to like trip out about how time is showing itself upon us? I mean, doesn't it make more sense from a sanity standpoint to be curious and interested and then like, how is time going to show itself on me? Like, how is nature and Sky Daddy and like my own genetics, how are they all gonna like alchemize and get together? And what is that gonna look like? How are they gonna do it? How is it going to uniquely show up on me? And how can I expand my own definition of beauty even more to include this new expression, right? Like it's a decision. I explain this to people all the time. Like, being beautiful, it doesn't really have anything to do with bone structure and symmetry and all those things. It's a choice. It's a decision. It's me deciding that I am beautiful and that, these lines appearing and these other changes are also beautiful, right? Like, it just is so much easier from an Occam's razor standpoint for me to expand my definition to include whatever's happening instead of for me to like chop myself up, have surgeries, inject botulism into my face. Like, just pulling outside, like, just doesn't that seem crazy that the lengths that people go to? And I've spoken about this before. I wrote about it in my first book, Word Up Little Languaging Hacks for Big Change, which is available as a print book, ebook, and audiobook, and is on sale now. But I wrote about this in that book, which is, how part of the reason why we have such a distorted, dysfunctional relationship to time in this culture, aside from the rampant death phobia that Stephen Jenkinson speaks and writes so brilliantly about, but is in the languaging, I am 20 years old, right? In other countries, the syntax is such that people will say, I have 20 years. Right? So it's not I am 20 years old, it's I have 20 years. So if this Wacom pen is 20 years and I have it, I can put it down and I still get to be me, right? There's no existential freak out. But if I am 20 years and that's my identity merely through the languaging, through I am this, it is a representation of my personhood, of my beinghood, of my existential isness. Well, now that's going to mess up my head because I'm identified with the sun spins, and that's what sucks us in to this wacko relationship that we have with time's onward ticking. That does it for part one of today's solo podcast. As you are inspired to tune into the second half, which I really encourage you to do because we nerd out pretty hard and deep and fun and juicy in the languaging realm. You can find the second half of this podcast and all of my podcasts on my Locals and Patreon communities. Those addresses are dannycats.locals.com and patreon.com/dannycats. They're also listed in the description of this show on either platform for as little as $5 a month. That's less than a basket of organic strawberries. You can get access, you will get access to all of my second half conversations, all of my post-show throwdowns, tons of bonus content. You'll get advance notice of courses, live events, workshops, special discounts. It's so well worth your while. And if you are getting any value whatsoever out of my show, it's very super helpful for me to receive that support from you, value for value style. As you're inspired to give just a one-time donation, if that's more aligned with where you're at in your abundancing, that is so very much appreciated. And you can do that through my website, which gives you options to donate through Bitcoin, through Venmo, and through PayPal. Of course, Bitcoin being my first choice. I'm also inviting you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com on my brand new Slick Titties, super amazing website. I'm very excited for you guys to check it out. And there you can sign up for my newsletter, which is the best way that we can stay in touch, regardless of what sort of craziness is happening with big tech and the First Amendment and their seeming confusion about what that means in terms of freedom of speech. All right, that does it. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you, yes, you are omniscopic amazingness. I'll see you over on the Locals and or the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.